The Weekly Connect. The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
There's been a lot of discussion in the visually impaired community about waiting times for a new guide dog. Now, you've told us that this was an issue that affected you, so we wanted to make it our top story this week. We reached out to some guide dog owners, and what really struck us was the disparity of waiting times. Someone who responded had been on the list for 4 years, whereas the quickest was 24 hours. Now, we all know it's a complex process of matching and training a guide dog, but how does this affect us as users? Well, guide dog owners Ben Rendell and Diane Woodford join me now to discuss this more. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're talking about guide dogs, and it's fair to say a lot of blind and partially sighted people out there are talking about the waiting times to get a new guide dog, and that's why we're having this discussion today. Ben, you are a young guy. There's nothing against that. not to sound jealous, but yeah, you're a young guy, and you have had a dog, what, for about 5 years?
5 years, yeah.
Wow, okay. Why did you get a guide dog, first of all?
I lost my sight, like, when I was around 12, so that's probably about 10 years ago. And I've always been around dogs, really, so it kind of seemed like a natural progression. It was suggested to me. I absolutely hated using a white cane, and I love dogs, so it just seemed that the obvious choice, and it's worked out for me ever since. So
and when you decided to go down the route of getting a guide dog, how simple was the process for you?
It was quite simple. I had, you know, obviously discussions about how young I was, because bearing in mind I was about 15 at the time. Mm. So it was kind of, you know, will you be able to handle a dog? So they kind of did all the normal assessments like mobility and you know, obviously all the other stuff about height and walking speed and all that sort of stuff. And then they gave me a dog for like a few days that, at the hotel, not a dog I was going to get, but just a dog that they had, just to see how I would cope. And then after that, I was put on the waiting list and then got my dog that I have at the moment.
So in terms of the process and the time it took, did you think it was fair? Did you think it was a reasonable amount of time?
It was for me, yeah. It's, you know, in all, it probably took about a year, so it wasn't... You know, I thought that was fair enough. You know, because at the end of the day, I wanted the dog that was right for me. Mm. So I was prepared to wait, you know, a bit of time just to make sure I got the dog that would work out in the end.
Okay. Diane Woodford, you're also a guide dog owner.
I am, yes.
And how many guide dogs have you had?
Are
you on your first or
second guide dog?
Okay. And what about the experience for you? How was it? I mean, from day one, so the day you decided to go down the route of getting a guide dog, you know, what was the process like for you?
My first guide dog, I mean, I lost my sight at 38, and I really, you know, one of the first things I wanted was a guide dog. Spoke to other blind people and asked, you know, people questions about what the best route would be, guide dog, cane, etc. I decided I wanted a guide dog. Very naively, I thought you just rang up and chose a cute dog and it took you out and looked after you. You're a bit like going to RSPCA. So I was very naive about the whole process. My first guide dog, actually, I thought was quite quick, because they said, you know, it could be up to 2 years for your first dog waiting. So I actually got my first dog within the year, which, you know, was amazing for me. My second dog was my hardest. My dog retired very suddenly at the age of 8 in the June. I was promised that I would have a dog by the time the clocks changed in the October, because I have no night vision whatsoever and was really, really struggling. That didn't happen. And it eventually this really sort of impacted my family. My little boy was at school crying because he didn't want mum not to be safe without a dog. He's only ever known me with a dog. So he was at primary school very scared that mum didn't have a dog anymore, and didn't like, particularly felt quite, I don't know, he was a bit unsure about being out and about with me without the dog. So the wait was quite long. But when I sort of investigated it, we had like one of the longest waiting lists, and in fact they were about to shut the waiting list for our area at the time I was waiting for my second job dog. But we have very little rehab in this area, and the council are quite happily telling people, go to guide dogs, they'll do your rehab. And a lot of people on the list were coming because it's the only way they could get rehab. So it was quite a political background to it, I think.
Okay, so you waited, what, 9 months for your new dog?
I waited just over 9 months for my new dog.
And what's it like? What is that experience like for you, going back to, I guess, using a white cane or relying on other people?
It really sort of impacted my social life. It impacted my family. Obviously, you know, the effect it had on my little boy. But my two older children were quite concerned. One was at university and, you know, was quite, you know, concerned that mum didn't have a dog. And I had a special needs child, so it was like, you know, is she going to be safe? And I think
the kids worry.
Was a big thing with me, was that I really relied on my dog for safety. Mm. I mean, I'm good at using a white cane, but because I actually tend to move around quite fast as well, I used to find the white canes really difficult. I'd end up getting it tripped in between my legs and tripping over it and things. Not having a dog sort of affected my confidence.
Yeah, I mean, Ben, you mentioned that you don't really like using a white cane, and I think that's one of those interesting discussions, isn't it? You know, it's like white cane or guide dog.
Exactly. I mean, you know, for me, it was just, it just wasn't natural. I mean, I was used to walking around without, you know, walking around unaided. So to then rely on this kind of piece of plastic and metal or whatever was a bit, it's really scary. So I guess a bit of, you know, at least the dog's, you know, alive and, you know, it's got eyes and that sort of thing. It probably sounds a bit silly, but it's easy to put, well, it was easy for me anyway, to put trust into a dog. And like even now when I don't have him, you know, when he's been away for a few days or whatever, I just don't go out because I find it really difficult to use a cane.
And it's interesting, you know, we're hearing across the country there are varying levels of waiting times for guide dogs. It can be for new people who want to, you know, have a guide dog, you could be up to 2 years. I've had that myself. I'm applying for a guide dog myself, and you know, I've been told that. And you know, I think when you're told that at the outset, that's probably quite fair, because you're then aware of the expectation. What a lot of people seem to be grappling with and having difficulty with, Diane, is the waiting times between having a guide dog. So if you've already got a guide dog and you're transitioning,
told quite clearly once that, you know, they retired my dog quite suddenly, and I was told that I was basically high priority, I was top of the list. So I think in my mind that was, it's not going to be long. I do know somebody else who was on the list at the same time as me, and she's only just got her dog, and she's been on the list well over 2 years because it was her first dog. And I felt a bit guilty actually getting my dog, because
you know,
I'd only waited 9 months. But it was 9 months of, you know, I think the thing is, it doesn't just affect the guide dog owner, it affects the whole family.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my mum also uses a guide dog. And, I mean, she, you know, she hasn't had one for years. She applied for one and she got one quite quickly a few years ago. But unfortunately, the dog didn't work out because it had medical problems and they had to retire it. And she goes out a lot. She goes out to help my elderly grandmother who can't go out on her own. And obviously, you know, that affects her as well. If she can't get to her, then she doesn't do her shopping or whatever. And in between waiting for a replacement for the one that didn't work out, it was a year, and you know, she's only just got one again.
I mean, what do you think is driving this? I mean, is it that we are maybe just a bit too hopeful that we can get a guide dog quickly, and actually the reality is, you know, there's a practical side of this. The dog has to be born and trained. You know, are we maybe asking too much of guide dogs to make it a speedy turnaround? Do we want it to the organisation to go down that route of, you know, turnaround of guide dogs?
I think my local guide dogs are under an awful lot of stress to keep up with the demand, and they can only work with so many blind people at the same time. But then guide dogs are doing more and more things other than just guide dogs. Have they taken on too much?
Yeah, and there's that question as well. And you know, they are doing it, and there's a lot of targets, and, you know, a lot of things seem to be target-driven. And that's causing an issue as well. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they have got to be trained, and you want all the time and attention to go into the dog to get the best results possible. So there can only be, you know, a reasonable amount of dogs that can come out of that, unless you start employing, you know, loads and loads of guide dog trainers. But at the end of the day, guide dogs is a charity, so that's not really, you know, it's not really possible. So I think there's got to be a reasonable amount of you know, expectation when we're thinking about waiting lists and stuff like that. I don't think you can't just expect to have a dog, you know, next week or whatever, unless we can somehow get the resources there to do that.
Diane, to your point, you were mentioning about guide dogs doing too much. What do you mean by that? Well, are they focusing on too much in your mind?
Over the last few years, they've taken on more things like My Guide, and different types of services for blind and visually impaired people. I generally feel that the staff work exceptionally hard, but they can't keep up with the demand of things what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, one person can only do so much, can't they? So.
Yeah.
But it is important, I guess, for charities to develop. And obviously, you know, it is a charity and it has to make money and it has to, you know, in order for it to survive. And also, I guess, you know, and we know because we've talked about it on RNIB Connect Radio for so long about the various amounts of work that guide dogs do to, you know, work with new technology companies to develop technology that can assist, not replace a guide dog, but actually work with and assist. So, you know, all that work is valuable, I guess.
I agree.
But are you suggesting that, Diane, that it's perhaps at the cost of the service that people expect from guide dogs?
It's become a very, very big charity, and as is doing loads more to help loads more blind and partially sighted people, which is a good thing. Nobody can argue that they are doing good things, but are they doing too much? I don't know. I think maybe that there's quite a lot of branches off guide dogs, you know, doing lots of other things as well.
Okay. Ben, you know, you're at the point where, you know, kind of midway, I guess, through your dog, and, you know, when it comes time, which will be a few years, let's hope, from now, that before you have to think about retraining, do these stories that we're hearing from people around the country give you any cause for concern about the future with guide dogs and you having a guide dog?
They do, because, you know, I work, you know, most days, and I've got to have a reliable way of getting around, and I can't just be sat, you know, kind of waiting for a guide dog or whatever it might be. So, I don't want to be stuck in a limbo sort of situation. So it does sort of concern me. It does sort of make me think that in a few years, is this problem going to get worse? Is it then going to affect me? What am I going to do? How long am I going to be without a dog? And it does really worry me.
Overall, though, are you both supportive of guide dogs as a charity?
I'm amazed with Guide Dogs as a charity. They have supported me really, really well. Yes, I did have a long way, and yes, it was really, really difficult, but I do understand that, you know, if a dog's not there, it's not there. But it does stop you doing things what you want to do while you're in that period of time. You know, I go up from Yorkshire to London to RNIB to help out at the offices there, but without a dog I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've moved a lot of the last few years and started, you know, different things, and the guide dogs have always been there to support me. They've never turned around and said no. So I think the support is there, and the staff and everybody, they work extremely hard to do what they can do for you.
I think my local team works so hard. I think they're under so much pressure that I think it must be so difficult for them. And, you know, it's hard, isn't it? How many more, you know, if you had more trainers, would you be able to keep the list at a reasonable level? But I do, again, with mine, is people are asking guide dogs for rehab training on the grounds they can't get it locally any other way.
Well, that brings up another issue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, which is a totally different issue, actually, but it does bring up the question mark of, because of the amount of cuts to local services, especially social work services and rehabilitation services, and we've seen this across the board, across the country, that these services are now expected to be picked up by charities like R&IB and Guide Dogs.
Yeah.
And that, in some respects, I guess, you know, it is putting a lot of pressure on these charities.
Yeah, I think.
And they're not getting, you know, any kind of support to do any of this extra work. You know, I mean, I asked my local authority for some white cane training around the local area just so I had a backup, but I was told that I had to go to Guide Dogs and they wouldn't do it. So. Mm.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate both of you coming on and being so honest about your thoughts on it, and we appreciate your time, Diane Woodford and Ben Rendell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, what do you think? Do you agree with what's been said? Do you think that Guide Dogs are a good charity and they're just under a lot of pressure? Well, what do you think? Do get in touch. And of course, we should say that we've, of course, been in touch with Guide Dogs about this, and we are hoping that we'll have Guide Dogs, a representative from the charity, on next week's The Weekly Connect to answer the very points that you're putting out there. Yeah, it really does make a difference to get in touch with this programme, because we can put the questions directly to the people that you may have concerns about or comments about.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On R&IB Connect Radio.